Asteroid. Hi, welcome to Actual Play, the podcast. This is Stars That Number, episode 6, part 1. And as I mentioned at the opening, we started this episode with the asteroid striking Tarakan Station. And thanks to Hope's precog abilities, she's able to get herself and her neighbors out of the shared housing area that she lives in just before it's vacuumed into space. But then we cut back a few days later to the ethical dilemma of what to do with Horatio Long. We have him frozen in a cryotube, and we want to know what he knows, but we're afraid of letting him out. How are we going to handle it? Atlas, Dartha, Hope, and Dr. Long all have to come to terms with what they plan to do. Enjoy as we work through that troubling situation. Hello, welcome to Actual Play, Stars Without Number, episode 6. This is our final episode plus one based on original plan, which is all to say that we love this game so much that we decided to keep playing it past original plan. Apparently you threw like an asteroid at us, Jay. That's fun. That's exciting. Anywho, I'm Sean. I use he, him pronouns. You can find me over at Sean Nittner. I'm very excited. I play Hope in this game. Hope is a precog pilot who has been developing more and more other psychic abilities ever since she removed her inhibitor chip from that have been put on her. And she's found out there are other psychics in the area doing all kinds of stuff, strange stuff. And she works for this agency that she doesn't know if she trusts, but it's getting closer. Like, she's feeling like she understands them more. So I'm excited to learn more about Hope and about fear and about all of you rad folks. How about you, Dominique?
Hi, I'm Dominique. I use they, them pronouns. You can find me on Twitter at DomSDiggy. I play Atlas, a 100-year-old pre-tech AI, and I am so stressed about the fact that the asteroid is imminent. My number one goal is to not immediately die at the top of this session. Because I have like other goals for after the asteroid.
It's hard to have goals, but come on, you're an AI that's basically indestructible. Like, worst case scenario, you just float through space for another 600 years till somebody picks you up and like finds you in another, you know, in another vault. You'll be fine.
Well, yeah. I guess the real question is, do I get to talk to the...
He might not be fine.
Yeah, the ancient Dr. Long, and also figure out what the sweet heck is up with Sinclair, because we really left that plot thread hanging a couple sessions ago. How about you, Tomes?
Hi, I'm Tomes, Tomer Grants, he, him. I will be playing Dartha in this, which is our little blob alien. And, you know, there's always like a couple of things going on in the background that we're not entirely sure that she knows or doesn't know or is responsible for. And so like, I think I'm going to continue to see some of that happen this episode and see, you know, if we can find out in what way she does and doesn't know, especially about our friends, RK and B, Rook, Knight and Bishop, who are, getting embroiled in our business. In regards to Atlas, I love that we look at him and we're like, oh, well, he's obviously indestructible, but he's an AI, which means like he's programmed to also go, I fear death, right? And it's like, it's interesting. I can't wait to see how all of us kind of intertwine in this episode. That's me. Over to Jay.
I'm Jay. I am your guide to the stars without numbers and this big asteroid. So I love the faction turns in Stars Without Number. And so that's where a lot of the stuff from the feed vine comes from. And I try to work that into the stuff that we're playing. And the factions were rolling hot this last turn. So we've got a lot of stuff to deal with. I'm ready to jump in when you guys are.
Yeah, let's do it. If you didn't check it out in the feed roll, in the feed vine beforehand, I'll throw up our I don't know if you can read that or not. who knows, but freak asteroid smashes into Tarakan Station. Tarakan Station took massive damage from an impact of the rogue asteroid hurtling through space. How this stealth rock managed to evade detection will be the subject of many inquiries. Evac and med teams are working around the clock to provide support, distressed station rescue calls. Also worth noting that ceasefire this week has been quiet. Irdos making repairs to its damaged facilities. Yon has been making its case to the other districts on Enestol for sanctions. So Yon and Irdos not fighting a freak asteroid smacking into Tarakan. I feel like they're onto us, or I feel like they're onto fear at least. Anywho, Jay, did you want to open up with the action?
Yes. So I think we've seen where Dartha spends her time at,
yeah.
And we've talked to Atlas about his quarters. What about Hope? What does Hope's quarters look like?
I think Hope is kind of a grease monkey by nature. I think that Squidly is, she's used to having to sort of, she's used to having to do a lot of her own repairs on it. And she also has this kind of jittery, I might have to bail at any time if things get too hot feeling, or at least that's how she started the series with. I don't think right. That's quite the same. So I think that she's up in docking quad alpha in that area. I think she's up the top so she can be near the ship and kind of also just keep an eye on, you know, bounty hunters that are docking in the landing bays and things like that. Yeah, so say she's up near the landing bays.
I think you're also, Hope is one of the newest members of the Fear team.
Yeah.
I think that they kind of, it looks like they have a lot of resources, but it seems like it's haphazard, right?
Mm-hmm.
They hand out things as they have them, as they repurpose them.
And like Raven has like four different suits of like
right.
super awesome armor, and Hope's like, so can you do repairs on the ship, right? Like it's yeah, it's not evenly distributed at all.
Right, exactly. What's so with that said, what's your room like? What are your quarters like?
I think her quarters are dinky. I think that they're like, I think she is, I just was watching Lower Decks, which by the way, if folks are if you're a Star Trek fan, but you also want like a bit of humor that Star Trek doesn't offer, Lower Decks is, it's really well done. But in Lower Decks, everybody just like lives in a hallway with little beds, and they're like bunk beds. I think it's a little bit more privacy than that. I think her space is like, yeah, I mean, I'm imagining like the equivalent of like tenement housing, where it's like a lot of shared facilities. So she knows her neighbors because they share a bathroom, they share cooking facilities. I think she has like a bed and like a little writing, a little desk like, where she can like flip through a data pad, and a little cubby like for clothes and personal effects.
Nice.
And everything else is kind of, as soon as she like opens the little door and rolls out of that little space, she's in like not quite a common hallway because it's like to the tenants only, but a shared hallway.
Gotcha. Nice. I like it. I think you're in bed or asleep. When you start to come around, wake up,
mm-hmm.
One, I think you notice that it's cooler than it ought to be. Not cold, but cooler. The station has like environment kind of set for the most part. Mm-hmm. People will tweak what they need to be comfortable. I think your room was comfortable, and now it's colder than you usually keep it. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah.
I think as you're coming into your consciousness, you notice that in the tight space, you're kind of floating. And whatever else isn't nailed down is also floating in that space with you.
Nice. Right?
And then I think as you fully become alert, the emergency red lights are on. And then the sounds come in, right? And you can hear the emergency sirens that are running. This is probably what's brought you out of your sleep.
Yeah.
These kind of conditions. Go ahead.
Just to showcase it a little bit, Hope has her very first power besides Oracle, the built-in one, was terminal reflection, which is basically the I can't be surprised. If I'd ever be in a surprise round, I'm not going to attack. So I imagine like there's a little bit of like popping awake and like trying to get fluid just as stuff is going on, just like but like it still takes her a moment to take it all in.
Right.
I dig realizing that I go to like pull my little blanket off of me. And it's super thin, but it's like one of these like normal likes to go to terminal and like realize I'm just like free floating in in there. Do you want like to see my next action or do you want to?
Yeah. So I think knowing, I forget about that. I think knowing that you can't be surprised, I think you know something bad is about to happen to that space where your room is.
That's awesome. I think I'm going to grab, I have a vac suit and like vac suits are like big and bulky, but I imagine it's like stored in my, like, you know, I imagine it like, cause all of my stuff has to be, it's stored in like a bay in the wall. Like you open up, there's like drawers and cabinet. There's like, they're all Star Trek beedly boopily. Like they slide open and there's like, I think I look at all this stuff and I'm just like, I just sort of hold my breath instinctively. Like, I don't know if air is gone or not, but I'm going to not take that chance. So I press all the buttons, slide up the panel, grab the back suit, slap the the reg on my face, like just like the helmet over. And then and turn it on so that like I've got like the tank. I'm not in the vac suit by any stretch, but at least I've got air. And then I'm gonna, pop open my little side panel to look at and see what's, and get the hell out of my bedroom in case it's about to explode.
Nice.
Bedroom, as in bed. That is
outside bed. The room. That's right. That is it. Nice. I think you get out of there just in time. I think that the impact has happened to the station, right?
Yeah.
And I think what's happening is the aftermath where pieces are being ripped off the integrity of the, and it got hit in that top section.
Nice.
The integrity of places is falling apart. Things are being ripped off the top. Stuff is being vented out as holes and breaches are made. And I think your room is being shredded, right? The outer walls are being shredded with whatever's getting ripped off and ripped away. I think that's the thing that doesn't surprise you. So you know to get out of there and keep moving to get to a area that will seal itself off. Other folks in the hallway, they're panicking. They're kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But I imagine, like other facilities, there's like fire drills, right? So folks kind of know which way to go, which way to run.
I imagine there's like a lit path on the ground.
Right.
It's like in an emergency, go this way and fall like you would on an airplane or something like that.
Right.
I kind of feel like Hope is just the kind of person she is. She'd be like shuffling people along while she's also like feverishly trying to get the vac suit on because she's like holding it with one arm and like just got the helmet over her and she's like trying to keep other people from, she knows something really, really like even worse is going to happen here in a second. So she's trying to get everyone out of the hallway into like the next airlock.
Nice. And I think the station, I don't know what to call it, like the station Alexa is letting, I think folks are aware there's a breach that's happened, right? So you know what the crisis is, you understand what the calamity is as folks are moving. If this is a TV show at home, that scene kind of ends and fades out and we roll back a day or two, however much time you need. Mm-hmm. I think everybody gets a scene, right? Before the asteroid impact. And then we'll come back and check in and see what Atlas and Dartha, and then bring everybody together and figure out what's going on in the aftermath of this impact.
Very cool. Does
that sound good? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Love it.
That was a sick cold open.
Yes. That was very dope. I'm especially happy to be the precog, getting like just now in a little bit, like a moment in advance. I definitely want Hope's bed area to be like ripped away the moment she gets through the door lock for the airlock.
Nice.
I do like that in like the more long form version of this, you know, where we develop all these other side characters and whatever, you know, like the full on writing of the TV show. There's definitely like a neighbor that you had, which is always like, you got to be prepared, sleep in the soup. And like, you know, this dude was not ready. Like you were ready, right?
Yes.
Love it. Yeah, and then as that hull gets ripped away, right, his helmet, his back suit gets sucked out in a way.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Let's take a look at Dartha. What's so I think where we left off, you guys hightailed it off of out of the vault. You have Horatio Long in the cryotube. You have the controllers for the nanites, right? It was a success all the way around. You made it back to Tarkon Station, unloaded. I think Horatio Long stays frozen in the tube. I think they move him to the med lab that we had Dartha in earlier with Timothy, and they kind of keep him under and keep him in the cryo tube. They don't try to break him out or anything. I think until a bit, and maybe the younger Dr. Long makes a big deal about, hey, let's not crack him out until we all have a conversation so we're all on the same page about what we're trying to do. And so he says, I don't have any preconceived ideas about anything. I don't have any restrictions. If we're going to do this, I want us all to be in together. So let's sleep on it, get together tomorrow and talk about what the big plan is, try to get on the same page. Right. So he's, that's him saying he's not doing any dirty dealing off the bottom of the deck. I know this is important to some of you. I don't want to mess that up, but I don't want to crack him open right now until we have a plan. So the moment that Squidly lands, right, he gets carted off to a fear lab. Like I said, it's the one Dartha was in, plugged in, and Timothy's kind of in charge of making sure the vital signs are good, letting everybody know what Horatio Long status is while he's there. I think the Dartha, you can tell us where the controller for the nanites go. I don't know what fear does with sensitive, dangerous materials, but I think you, Dartha, may have worked on stuff before.
Yeah, I think there's it's a chamber that's kind of similarly, there's like some security protocols around it. We can tell like there's one or two actual physical guards in addition to the fact that there's, you know, a couple extra badge swipes and things, right? So suddenly we're like one or two levels back. and I think there's this room where, similar to how there's these huge cryo tubes to hold people, right? Mm-hmm. Here, there's a room with a whole bunch of different size, similar type looking things. Like it's almost like when you go into a bank and you see, what do you call those things? You know, the secure boxes.
ATMs?
Oh. No, I
safety deposit box.
The safety, yes. Deposit box.
So you totally get that vibe. You can tell I don't really have one of these. you can totally get that vibe from it because there's like, you know, there's some big ones that are kind of the size of maybe what a cryotube would be for a humanoid. And then there's a whole bunch of other small things like that. I think that how big is the nanite thing? Like, what do we?
And they were like, yeah, in box crates.
Right. I think they're in like standard size crates, like what is that, 2 feet by maybe 4 feet boxes,
right,
that you carry. They're lightweight, they're not super heavy. There might be 3 or 4 of those boxes.
So I think that they're actually put into these kind of what look like cryotube type boxes. So this box is put in a more secure box, and that is put kind of like up in these walls and locked, right? So we can see that, you know, whoever locks it, like you need certain clearances and levels and whatever to get to this stuff, right? Gotcha. I'm there, and you know, just kind of like we're seeing this happen in the background, and you know, maybe they even have me sign off on a thing or two. There's some administrative stuff that I'm dealing with. I turn to leave, and before I leave, I kind of look back, and my focus is on a specific small kind of like safety box, you know, in the corner there. And we can tell, like, I'm tempted to go and get it, but then I'm like, and I just kind of like leave, right? And I think I had, depending on how long this scene is or whatever, like, I'm happy if it's just like I kind of walk into that little kind of alien bar place where Clack usually is, and I'm just kind of looking for some respite.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. I like it. Have you told Clack about Sinclair?
I don't know if we've had time to talk about it. I kind of have the impression that Clack was somewhere in the background and worried, right? Like maybe I was in the hospital bed, right. But maybe didn't, he doesn't have clearance to go in there, right, and everything kind of happened so quickly that,
right.
This maybe is the first time that we're kind of talking since that situation.
Gotcha. Nice. All right. I think Clack is still all high energy, maybe more so, right? And is talking about all the locations that he's gotten to travel and the human stuff he has gotten to see. He's good at picking up languages and translating. So a lot of times they're using him in that capacity. And he's running through this new species they found two systems away that they didn't realize was sentient, but he was able to communicate with it, right? And keep some development, some things from happening because they're more than just some insects, right? So he's excited about that. He's relaying that story back to you, talking like a mile a minute, just.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that we notice is like, I come in and I look a little like I'm sighing, kind of depressed a bit. And we know that there's this unspoken Sinclair thing, but I also know how Clack talks and how Clack expresses emotion. So, and I read emotion, right? So like I'm seeing kind of these waves of sadness and, all the stuff coming off of him, despite the fact that he's, talking like that, right?
Right.
In fact, I kind of empathize by talking back at him also really quickly and whatever. So like I'm doing the same thing, but there's like what I think us as humans would see as the surface of that, looking very excited, but there's also like these undertones of like we're mourning together, right? And in Clack style.
Nice. I think the conversation continues that way as long as you'd like it to. I think Clack is it's not in his nature to ask, right? The big thing that's on his mind. He's concerned, but he will never ask what happened or nothing more than how are you? And that how are you could be how are you now, today, or how are you, right? It's, there's no inflection there for him.
I think there's one last little thing, which is just like, and it's kind of unspoken with that that little safety box that was in that room, is that, Clack actually asks me about that and is like, oh, did that thing come in?
Right.
Your delivery. I know it was very important to you. And I say, yeah, but I need somebody else to be able to watch over it in addition to myself. And I kind of like pull out my security badge.
Right.
And I kind of like spread it sideways. And there's actually two copies of the badge in there. And I give one to Clack.
All right.
And then I just pocket the other one.
Nice.
And again, there's this like, there's been this undertone of like, is this like, this does not look legit like something you should be doing with these secret organizations, like giving out this kind of information and passes and whatever. But this has like been a theme and it continues to be a theme.
Right. I think Clack just moves with it, right? I think this isn't the first time and he's all about it, right? And I think he's got, he's two-fisting. I think he's got two drinks of whatever it is he's drinking, right? And his third hand, because he's got like four or six of them, picks up the badge, puts it in his little vest pocket thing, right? And it's all, everything is everything. Nice.
Very cool. I'm glad the clack is still your bud.
What does Atlas get into between undocking and the asteroid impact? We're playing with time, so.
Yeah. I feel like Alice's first order of business is just a night off, because everything has been pretty nonstop since he got woken from his like several hundred year nap.
Right,
So Alice is going to have like a nice shower and a good sleep. And then upon waking, his like first order of business is, I think, going to be while we're on the station to follow up on what Dr. Long said about Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
I think where Atlas would start with doing that, it might entail just asking Dartha what she knows, because Sinclair was a friend of Dartha's. And because Atlas would know that Sinclair is what caused the explosion in Dartha's quarters.
Right, right.
And Dr. Long had previously said that Atlas is the reason why Sinclair felt the need to attempt to blow up Dartha. And I want to know what's up with that, so that I can better protect my friend.
No, I think that's perfectly fair. I think that's 100% fair. Do you want a scene and a conversation with Dartha, or are you doing some research first?
Do you want me to give you some help doing the research? Like, it could be a very tiny like thing between you and I, but giving you some access.
I think what I would start with is like using a tablet and just messaging Dartha.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, and trying to like cushion, because I know that Dartha has like been significantly betrayed by a very close friend.
Right.
So trying to not seem like demanding or pushy, but very gently asking, what the heck is up, my dude?
I want a scene right after this where I'm not gently asking Dartha something. So this is perfect.
Right.
I don't want to interrupt this. I when you said I'm asking very gently, I was like, oh, that's great. I love it.
So Hope's going to ask not gently, but first Alice is going to be like, hey, this is a really rough time for you. I'm sorry that you got exploded and almost died. Can we talk about what's up with Sinclair, though?
And this is communication through like some comm devices and stuff, or what?
Yeah, okay. I would like text you.
No, that's great. So I think this message comes through and Dartha is just like finally in her quarters, which is definitely a cut above what we saw with Hope's quarters, you know, like a few minutes ago. And she looks at it and you can tell she's thinking, Dartha, I'm thinking like, what, you know, how do I respond? And we're like, how's Dartha gonna respond? And there's this quick flashback to like us coming back from the station, coming back to this station from the Black Hole station. And you know, like again, I'm doing this thing where I'm reading emotions and from other sentient creatures, but I'm just getting waves of that from Atlas, right? And like there's this whole scene where the two of us, I think, are talking, and like I'm asking you questions, and I'm like, oh, interesting. How does that make you feel? Like I keep asking these like feeling questions, and then you know you're responding just like any of us would, but I'm like sitting there just like,
that your best friend tried to kill you. It makes me totally so confused.
But I think there's an attachment to my, like to my response to you, which is like an image file.
Okay.
But it's odd because it's an image file of actual text, which is like, why would you send an image file of text, right? But like, it's like codes that you can use to access things you shouldn't have access to.
Ah, sick. Okay. I think the next thing that I want to do is try to look in like ship personnel logs, which might have been what Dartha helped me just get access to.
Right.
And see, like, where aboard the station is Sinclair?
Gotcha.
And I think there's even a little bit of, for me, saying like, Sinclair is a pretty clever individual and was probably able to cover their tracks. You know, like there is like a, who knows what we'll find, you know, I don't know how far you'll get, but I give you whatever access I can.
Or like, is Sinclair even still here? Like seeing if I can find record that they left or records of their movements.
Nice. I like that. Let's make that a skill check.
Okay.
I think that's a no, right?
Okay.
I was thinking program, but you're doing more research than hacking or...
Yeah, I'd say it's more like just doing research.
Right.
I have a minus one to know, and that would be with intelligence.
Yes. But
does me giving the code constitute help?
Yes. Yes, it does. I was going there. Yes.
Sweet. Okay.
And your target numbers are 10.
Okay.
Ooh. Sinclair is hard to find.
Let's see how Tomes rolls. Oh, all right.
Didn't roll. I didn't. I have. I can't see it. Oh, there. That's not so good.
It's five. Yeah.
Not the greatest. All right.
Yeah. Like I said, Sinclair's good at covering his tracks. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neither of us hit.
Yeah. So the interesting thing, though, is you're going through the data, and you can go through a lot of data being an AI and connecting to Tarkon Station. I think what stands out is you're looking around the event when the explosion happened. You roll forward in time, and then you roll back in time to, you know, maybe retrace Sinclair's steps, right? And all you get over the past, let's say, 30 days is Sinclair going to the docking bay 8, where you guys are, back to Sinclair's quarters. And then the common dining area, a common dining area. That's it, right? And it's like clockwork every day, the same time, those three locations. And the problem is, you know that you've never seen Sinclair in the common dining area. You've never seen him there. He's never been there, right?
Okay.
But their logs say he has been, and he's been at these two other locations like clockwork.
Yeah. The logs say dining area, our docking bay.
And I don't have the docking bay. And his own quarters.
Okay. That's sinister. Love that.
Now, docking bay 8 is the place of lots of activity.
Yes.
So there's been... let's see if I can...
I was gonna say you're going through the feed, aren't you?
I'm literally scrolling through the feed vine right now. I mean, Alice would know this. We might as well highlight it.
It is true.
You see that? So this was a little while back. You see that vet in Bay 8, out of the system, out of system on the squid docks. Leviathans, fix that for you. They're using the green robed mercs too, which I believe is the Order of the Mantis. Hardcore. Mother Duckers murdered my last crew to the miner. Hope they get 8. So there's been some Order of the Mantis folks hanging out on Dock 8. And let's see if I can find. Oh no, I just. At least that I know. I will look for more stuff on that in Dock 8. But it is a place of interest.
I do love that. Like, what was that?
Oh, I was gonna say, my first thought with having never seen him in the dining area is maybe he gave whatever tag is used to track him aboard the station to someone else. And has like someone, or just, I'm like, is disguising someone else's movements as his own.
Yeah.
Like maybe he's not really in any of these places.
Right. More on Dock 8. I don't know, those Krakens are moving big loads from Bay 8 down to Ennis, secure too. I saw it, hoping to score one of those tentacle freaks. Payback. Best not. That's Harker. That's a Harker fund you'd be stealing from. BS, Ogre. I was there when OX09 burned out Remy Automag and Harker's traitorous peach ass. That's a little peach emoji. We know Harker's alive, so there's that. So yeah, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Just wanted to throw out more activity happening.
No, that's good, because what I will say, this is awesome. Those two events, along with the stuff that you're running through the station logs from, Sinclair took a delivery on that first event, right, from Bay 8. And then whenever that second feed vine event occurred, Sinclair was shipping big heavy loads off the station. So they kind of correlate to each other. And sometimes the species, I guess, yeah, Dartha would tell you that, are called krakens, squids, because folks who have seen them up close and spent some time know they have those pencil-like tentacle things, right? But most of the time, they're on that docking station, right? And they don't show all of that. But folks who've been close have seen the rest of them.
Nice.
So Sinclair is a problem for us.
That's fair to say.
Yikes, man.
Maybe.
I feel like I'm just like angry emoji because he tried to call my friend, and that's not cool.
And that is fair, right?
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
I think Dartha is actually in however blobs weep. That's what Dartha is doing in her chambers, right? Because like Sinclair was part of this group that she very specifically created strong emotional bonds with.
Right.
So much so that she is totally caught off guard by the fact that Sinclair could have hidden any of this stuff because she has all these like psychic tendencies too, right?
Right.
And so, you know, imagine if like your best friend from like who knows how long and suddenly this level of kind of betrayal and like all of that's faked, right? Like I think she hasn't really had time to process that. So maybe this message even comes in, like, I don't know if you write some of that in a message, right? Like Atlas does, but I think she's actually taking a moment, like has shut down like sensory, like she's turning off her comms and things like that, which she usually doesn't do because, you know, emergencies and stuff, but you know, there's other people around who can handle that stuff. So she's actually like turned everything off and she's just kind of dealing.
I think I would send over what I know, and I would probably get like the thing that you get on like WhatsApp or Messenger where it says like delivered but not received. Right. I think I would get like that little emblem and I'd be like, oh, Dartha's having a day.
Yeah.
Because Dartha does not turn her phone off.
Yeah.
I would love to have a scene that follows right up after that.
Yep.
It's perfect.
Yep. That is perfect.
Dominique, did you get what you want? Okay, awesome.
Yeah, I'm good.
So I'm looking at my little data pad and I'm just like, Dartha, and she's avoiding me. She always answers her phone. You know, she always picks up. She just doesn't want to hear from me. So like, I think that there's that little like, Dartha's sort of like turning everything off and like your phone, your data pad is on silent, right? So it just like lights up with that like message from Atlas, but it doesn't like alert or buzz or do anything else. It just kind of like glows and then it dimmers again. And then there's like another buzz, but this time, but then there's like another sort of like light, but this time it's like somebody at your door, like effectively, you know, you're getting the poodoop, 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 as Hope is like, I know you're in there. Open up.
Open up.
Yeah, and maybe we do see a little bit of like weird blobbiness. And that Dartha is a pool of blob on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? Just like
so bad for Dartha. Oh my god.
She can shapeshift slowly. So she does kind of like, you know, it's obvious somebody wants in. It looks like it's important. They're not going away. So she just kind of like slow rolls over to the door and a little hand pseudopod comes up and like hits the button. And, you know, she's starting to like get a form, but I'm assuming you're there, right, Hope?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when that door opens, you see this kind of like I think your kind of eyes are up here, like this is where Dartha usually is, right? But like I'm down there somewhere.
Yeah, I think I almost step on you. I'm thinking of the way my dog gets underfoot all the time, and like how he's very like, if I'm making something in the kitchen, it's really hard not to step on him. I find I have to like move my feet sideways rather than step, because otherwise he'll just get right underneath. So I think I'm like looking in, I don't see anything, and I go to step and I'm just like, oh, you know, and realize and like have to like scooch around. So stuff, yeah.
And I'm kind of apologizing, maybe. I'm just saying, like, I'll just need a moment. Like, it sounds like I need an emotional moment, but, like, literally I'm, like, yeah, reforming.
Yeah, and I don't know how, like, Hope know, like, what Hope's sense of your, you know, I don't, to some degree, I think Hope feels like she caught you in your underwear, right? And so she's sort of like, you know, I'll go over here and get myself a glass of water. And she's like staring away from you, kind of like waiting to hear like a sound like you're ready to engage. And she's like very slowly pouring herself a glass of water out of a pitcher.
And, you know, like I let you, like I'm seeing you do that and I am kind of putting myself together, but there's a part of me which also speaks up after a moment. And I'm like, I can hear you while I become more presentable. And I'm using words that are obviously like the human words that people use when they're caught in their underwear.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think I really care. It's more like, oh, got it. The human is feeling embarrassed because they think they caught me undressed or without my makeup on or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I think you're picking up the Hope's angry.
I'd probably feel that immediately.
Yeah, I think you would feel that the moment you open the door, maybe before you open the door. She's holding, not like white knuckled, but she's got like a firm grip on the glass. And she's like, no, I'll wait till you're ready. I want to look you in the eyes. She sort of like stumbles over whether that should be singular or plural.
I think I'm actually, so like I start talking to you. And I'm like, as I'm forming, it's going to take a minute, but, you know, I'm sorry if you caught me a little bit in a sad state. I needed just a little bit of time to process what's happened in the last few days. I lost a very, very close personal friend of mine, and even though I'm making some very close friends, it'll take time to get over this one. And I don't know if you catch that I'm saying I'm making close personal friends and you're one of them.
Yeah, I don't think Hope's in a, I mean, I think there's that thing where the camera is looking at Hope and seeing you behind her and you're talking, and it's clear that she is emoting on her face. But it's a stifled emote, as like she could have heard this, but if she was in a better mood, it would have been more effusive. And so instead it's that like head cock up a little bit rather than a full smile or something, you know? And she says, maybe that's why we shot those. That's why we shot those mercs that were just trying to get a load off, get a haul off of Hades Kennel 3. Is that why? Because you were feeling betrayed by Sinclair? And she turns around. So yeah.
I don't feel that the decisions we made were purely emotional at that time. I'm afraid that as a large organization, sometimes we make, and she starts going off on like this, you know, it's not really like an emotional speech. I'm just talking about like the logistics of large secret organizations and balancing, you know, big powers and, you know, contingencies and da 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 da. So I'm just like blabbing a little bit, but it's logic talk. So I don't know if that's going to be infuriating to you.
It's super infuriating. I think she just cuts you off like at some point. She's like, were you there with me when I talked to Raven and said, I've got your back, but not if you're just going to go murdering people for no reason? I think you were there. I'm pretty sure you were there. I'm pretty sure we were all unified in that we weren't going to use violence to solve all of our problems unless that was our only choice. I arrived and the situation as presented to me over comms was, we're in a firefight. We're desperate. Get here. Give us cover. And I arrived and I shot a man who was just trying to load some junk in a box.
And I kind of like sigh, like the whole body kind of gets a little big and small. Believe it or not, I can empathize with you. And I don't have total control over all these individuals. Raven is not under my jurisdiction.
Raven wasn't there. That was you and Atlas. And Atlas is under your jurisdiction. He does what you tell him to do. So I'm holding you accountable for it.
Then I will be accountable.
So what I want to know is, where do we all stand? Because I was trying to gain Raven and Long's trust because I thought I had yours. I thought that we were not necessarily in agreement about everything, but I thought that we had some general principles that we followed. But now I don't know. And I really, really want to be part of
something. What is our purpose? Like, she totally just interrupts and she says, what is our purpose? And she kind of expansively puts out her pseudopods, like three of them in three different directions. And she's like, I mean, what is our purpose? You know, and she's saying it with a capital P, like, like what are we here to do?
Yeah, but hope is like, hope is very like much in the immediate. Like she's like, right now it's to keep the nanite tech.
No. Not now. What is our purpose? What is your purpose? Why are you here, Hope?
Huh. There's an answer to that. I'm just not sure Hope's ready to tell you.
So I think I wait for a moment, like if you're not, and I'll just respond.
She sort of sits down. It's clear that like you've sort of diffused some of her anger and she's still upset, but she's not like frothy upset anymore. She's just like frustrated and she sort of sits down and it's clear that like she's going to respond, but it's taking her a moment to collect her thoughts.
And I think while she does, you know, I say a couple things like you might look at me and think that my purpose is to follow the orders of Dr. Long. That is incorrect. You may think that I am here to deal with the requirements that agent, you know, the agents of fear put into me. That is also incorrect. I am looking at all of us, all of our people, right? And I'm saying our people very inclusively, like all of us sentient alien species or whatever, you know, whatever this organization, larger organization we have.
Right.
You know, I believe that our people need to bond. And right now that is not happening, not in a way that's gonna be sustainable. And honestly, you all aren't very good at that. And that's a very like, I'm talking about you humans, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, a bunch of us have problems. We all have our problems, but we need to work together sometimes to get those solutions in place. None of us can do it on our own. That's why I'm here.
Well, that's loftier goals than me. I just wanted to find a home.
That is part of it. That is a lofty goal. My goal is also to find a home. Like there's a part, she's not just saying it to try to make you feel good. Like, she's like, no, tap into that shit. Cause that's exactly what I'm talking about. Right. Like I'm talking about, it's not following orders. It's doing the right thing. Right. And, you know, I think she's like, look, sometimes decisions are made and those aren't always the right decisions in the moment. And I will take accountability for that. But my goal, I just outlined it to you. And, you know, it's kind of left unsaid, like the question, which is, what is your goal, right?
Yeah.
But she doesn't have to say.
Sure, we make mistakes. And I am definitely not, I've definitely made plenty of my own. But when we keep going forward, if this is going to be home, and if you're going to be family, then we've got to reconcile those. We've got to own up to those, because I want to hold Long and Raven accountable for their actions. And I want to be able to try and continue growing trust with them, but I can't if I'm turning around and just say, if I'm calling you my family, but I'm turning a blind eye, I'm not acknowledging when I think you make a mistake. And the same goes for me. If I fucked up. Right now, I want to say that wasn't right.
I think there's a moment, and then, I think I respond with, what would make you trust me?
Nice.
I think that's the weird thing about trust. You can't make anybody do it. I wish I could tell you, do this, that, or the other. I just want to see you take action. I just want to see you, whether that's in a mission brief or whether that's in your own personal thoughts and reflection. I just want to know that you didn't do that thoughtlessly. Or if you did, if you made a mistake, that you're working to make sure that doesn't happen again. Because those guys didn't need to get shot. Didn't need to be shot. And I'm glad Timothy was there to make sure they didn't die.
And I think I just kind of like re-blobify back onto the ground. And I don't know if you realize this, because you know, you don't really know us blobs and things. Yeah. But like, that is an extremely vulnerable thing that I'm doing.
Seems vulnerable, right? It's like a cat laying on their back, showing you their belly.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I will not move as quick as a cat. I am much slower. So like, yeah. It is like being very vulnerable in front of you. But like, maybe that doesn't come across. I don't know.
I think so. I think if you'd like to, it can. And I think maybe the camera sort of fades, as though maybe they continue the conversation. Like, it doesn't end the conversation there, but
right.
The rest of it is
right.
But we don't need to say. Nice. Cool. Thanks.
No, that's true. That's nice.
Yeah. Sorry, I was not gentle.
No, that was great. Come right in there into the face. I love it.
Yeah.
I think, right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Jay, give us the hurt.
I think at some point, Dr. Long is true to his word. He invites everyone to a meeting room, a fear hall on the station. No one has been to before, except maybe Dartha, right? It's closer. It's got an observation deck kind of view of the planet and its tull kind of down below it. It's got that boardroom kind of feel, but there's a lot of sciencey lab type stuff in there. Presentation type materials in there for giving talks and things like that. So that's where he's called everyone to have this talk. Timothy shows up. Timothy's there. Raven's there when you arrive. And he's kind of dressed down when you all arrive. So he's not all businessed up. And he's not in a combat suit either, so.
he doesn't look ready to receive an award or lob a grenade.
Right. He might even be a little scruffy, right? Maybe whatever passes for jeans and not a t-shirt. It's probably a button-up shirt, but that's and shoes. That's as casual as he's going to get, right? And he's kind of looking out of the observation window down at Anis Tull, the planet. And he said, I'm glad I wasn't any of the initial colonies that arrived generations ago, right? They had it rough building out the foundations of what we're doing today, where we live today. I feel like I'm just trying to keep it all going, right? Trying to keep it all together. And I feel like it's all kind of like holding water. But that's what fear is. We're trying to hold it all together, humanity. And I hate to keep stressing, he's looking at Atlas. I hate to keep stressing humanity, right? But that's who I am, right? That's where I'm from. Right? And ultimately, right, you can't be here without us, right?
No, I wouldn't be here without humans, especially certain humans.
So it's not that I have any animosity. I'd like to be indifferent, but I also recognize the dangers that come with AI. I don't have an answer. I don't know if we built better brakes, right? I don't know what that feels like, right? I don't know anything about if that feels right or anything. I have no idea. And that might be an act out of fear on our part. So, but I'm babbling. I'm sorry, go ahead, I'm sorry.
For my part, I can assure you that the brakes are on.
And I guess I'm saying we humans never had that conversation with AI, right? We immediately tried to curb the amount of danger, the amount of threat AIs could represent. We never thought about another way or had a conversation with, is there another way? Or how does it feel? Does it feel? We just did.
Who's here? Is it all of us?
Yes, everybody.
Okay.
All of us with Raven and Timothy as well.
Yeah, I think, so I'm gonna speak up. Mm-hmm. And I just do like a weird parable thing. It's not like exactly responding to that, but it just like I talk a little bit about how when us blobs first created, you know, in quotes, something that was artificially intelligent, and it wasn't done through mechanics. It was actually done through some like bioengineering stuff of another creature from our homeworld, right? But we got to the point where, oh, they are sentient and intelligent like we are, right? And we as a, you know, a peoples had that realization. And we had this exact same question, which is, what do we do now? These other sentient creatures could do anything. And we stopped and wait, but also we can do anything. We are also unpredictable. Like, what prevents us from doing those things? And we just put in place the same rules for us and for them, right?
Right.
And so like, I just kind of like leave it as a little story, but that's kind of what I'm arguing here, right? Is that Atlas is not, you know, is no longer subject to like programming rules. That's you're not there anymore, right? Right. He is an intelligent, living, you know, person, right? So you got to treat him like other living people. But like, you know, it's like almost like these religious type of like, or like folk tales, you know, like, oh, that's very cute. But also somebody's got a remote control that can, you know what I mean? Like, I know that Dr. Long won't be convinced. But it's
right,
still a story.
Right,
that comes
out. Right. I think he takes a sharp breath and has to keep himself composed. And he says, I think my point is, I care about humanity and I don't understand enough about things that are not human. My case in point is Sinclair. Sinclair's not an AI. But why did it do what it did? I don't know. right? And you, Dartha, you're the closest relationship I thought Sinclair had. And he damn near killed you. Why did that happen?
We're working to figure that out. We'll have answers for you soon.
Right.
I think Dartha's point is that Sinclair could have been human. He could have been, and this is reckoning back to maybe the conversation last night. Like,
right.
Sinclair and Dartha could have been best friends, and he could have been a human that had secrets, that disagreed with her, that had strong feelings, and could have done the same thing. I mean, humans bombing other people? Hello? Have you checked the feed vine? It's not like it's something that hasn't happened in the recent past.
But I know why we do it. I don't know why Sinclair did what Sinclair did.
But do the people who get blown up by you know why you did it? Or are they left to wonder? I mean, yeah, you're right. We should find the answer, but why is the answer with Sinclair inherently any more mysterious than the answer why anybody does something? Is his programming that much more sophisticated than, since you are so concerned about it, the human mind?
Right now I'm concerned about Atlas and Horatio Long. I think Atlas is mostly fine. And he kind of closes his eyes and kind of that eyebally roly thing, mostly fine. As long as Horatio Long is far away from Atlas, right? But I would say that to any AI at the level of Atlas and Horatio Long. I would not want Long around any of that stuff.
Okay, what if, and it's a big if, but what if, and bear with me, what if we put Horatio Long in a soundproof box with a glass window, and then we just hold up signs to communicate? I get to ask him my questions. He has no way of doing whatever it is you're afraid of to me.
I don't want to do it, but I think that's a good compromise.
Do you have a soundproof box we can use for this?
We could make something.
Cool. Sick. Love that.
Yeah, we can make something.
The other thing is, one of us can be in that room with him. I don't want him in the same room as you, Atlas. I agree with that, but that doesn't mean Raven can't be in that room with him.
Raven with the big ass gun.
Right.
Yeah, so I think...
The gun even. Just Raven right. With her intimidating self.
Yeah, so Long says, I think I don't think he's a murderer, right? That he's going to put his hands on you and kill you, right? I think he will design things that can do murderous things, right? I think he and science are dangerous. I don't want to give him tools, right, that come second nature to him. So a soundproof, empty, whitewashed room sounds perfect, right? And if you're going to write messages back and forth, that seems mostly harmless, right? I'm still skeptical, but I think that's doable.
Tools to write back. You're going to have to give him something to send a message back.
We're probably going to give him something as primitive as possible, right? I think when we start to think we're smarter than Horatio Long is when he has us where he wants us. So I don't want to underestimate him. I think we can do this. We can put him in a soundproof box. We can write messages back and forth. I don't think he's physically dangerous.
I think we can do this. This is what happens when you work together with your friends. I know you care about humanity, but Dr. Long, you really need to think bigger than this. And like, it could be, that could tone and that phrase could be totally insulting.
Right, right.
Right? I mean, Dr. Long is like a fairly distinguished individual, right. But like, I kind of have the feeling that we've talked before, and I know when Dr. Long is okay being pointed out that maybe he needs to think about something he didn't see or whatever, right? So right. Maybe I'm gambling a little bit, but like, I also know him. I've worked with him for a while. So I don't think I'm just throwing this out there to like insult him in his face or something. I think he knows right. How to take it.
It's just so, I think a virtual hologram kind of screen comes up, like a to-do list app, right? And on that, at the top of that list was Horatio Long discussion, right? And then he kind of checks that off, right? And it's big enough everyone can see it. And the next under there is the nanite controllers. And he's like, so my thought is we get some engineers in, we figure out how those things work, and if we can broadcast some type of destructive, self-destruct signal, something to make them inert from this end. And then all the nanites are useless after that. Any other ideas?
Just before that list goes away, by the way, I think Dartha does see a couple of notches down is like check up on Dartha's homeworld coordinates.
Right. Yeah. I think it says ask Dartha about those coordinates.
Right. Okay. No, that sounds great.
Right. So I feel like there's this chess game kind of going on, right? So I think he knows you're going to see that, right? And so it's worded that way that he is going to ask you, right? Because we've had this discussion before, and I know you gave me some song and dance. I'm going to ask you again. Yeah. I think that's what that means, yes.
Right. And I would argue that after their conversation the night before, Dartha may feel that Hope's estimation of her will change if she continues to be disingenuous. Because she's lied point blank a couple times.
Yes, she did.
And basically, like, Hope is like, I don't want to call people like my friends and family if I feel like they're all lying to each other.
Right.
Like, I got to figure out what the bounds are. So just to throw that out there. Not that she'd necessarily know. I think Darth is a good enough liar. It's not like Hope can read her tells that well, but
it's fantastic.
Should we take a break and then cut to Horatio Long waking up in a white box room?
Well, does that happen before or after the?
Or does that happen before the asteroid?
So I'll leave it up to you folks. Do you want to wake him up before the asteroid?
Can we wake him up before the asteroid, but not determine whether or not the asteroid hits while we're talking to him?
Well, the asteroid hits while Hope is asleep, right?
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. Right.
Yeah. Right. So I think we should wake him up. I think we should wake him up and we can cut away at any time to, we'll need to come back for further, you know. Yeah.
I'm good with that. That's perfect.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to break now, or do you want to do that?
No, we could break now. I think that's good. Unless there's something else out of this meeting. I think Horatio was just covering the big things, the nanite controllers, Horatio Long, trying to show that I can compromise and we can do some things, but I'm doing them in service of humanity. Are his words.
I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect. That means I'm doing my job, right?
I mean, he's saying where his allegiance is, right?
I just feel like every time he says humanity, like Atlas rolls his eyes so hard that he sees the inside of his brain.
Right, nice. I mean, Atlas could. Nice. I think I feel like he's trying to say like, I'm working with you, but ultimately at the end of the day, I'm not going to prioritize you over whatever else I think is more important. And it's a very tentative trust.
Right.
Very delicate one. All right. Okay, friends, let's go grab some snacks, do some stretches, do our bios, and we'll be back in a few minutes. See you soon. Holding up a sign through a soundproof glass window. Okay, here we go. Here's the plan. This particular part of the game kind of made me think of the way Blades in the Dark is designed and the way in which I wish we had a similar mechanic within Stars That Number, because this was one of those planning episodes where we spent the first half really just trying to figure out what our approach is going to be without really knowing what
without really knowing whether it was going to work or not, or whether or not we were turning the right dials, whether or not we were anticipating the right things. And while I'm excited to be proven wrong, I also like to jump into the action and like to say, okay, we have a rough plan, we'll go with it. And then when things come up we're not prepared for, we'll flash back to how we prepared for them. And not that we couldn't have done that, but Stars That Number doesn't directly call for it. And so I think we got into that what if scenario. And normally I would say, oh, please don't give me a session of planning. But a session of planning with these amazing people, with all of these sort of ethical stakes in play, made it completely worth it. Lots of fun. So come back for next part where we unfreeze Horatio Long.